This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
Welcome to the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Celtics have a new head coach, and the Red Sox hit the halfway point of the season. Appreciate you taking some time to join us here on this July 4th weekend. Happy birthday, America. 245 years young and shooks height. So, all right, so let's talk about this. The Celtics have a new coach, and you know, we know about the drama which took place. Danny Ainge out, retires. He leaves the president of basketball ops job, and job he had had since 2005. Brad Stevens then takes over. He gets kicked upstairs. He's having some difficulty, it would appear, communicating and getting the most out of the players. So they need a new head coach, and he moves upstairs. Everything kind of works out. The new head coach is a really interesting one in Ime Udoka. Udoka is a protege of Greg Popovich and has the same philosophy of being able to coach guys hard via relationship building. So he invests in you as an individual, cares about you more than basketball, and is able to get the most out of you on the basketball court. First, let's hear from Brad on the hire.
We're really excited to have Ime as our next head coach, not only from the standpoint of all the experiences that he's gained as a player, as a coach, at different levels of FIBA, at different levels of the NBA, overseas, et cetera. But he is just an authentic, super person. And, you know, I think one of the things that, you know, as we go through this journey together, that you really want to share that with people that you're excited to work with every day. And I can tell you from, you know, myself, to the staff in the building, to the players, you know, we're all excited to do that and go on this journey led by Ime. And so it is a great privilege to be sitting next to him. It's been a great journey to get to know him way better than I knew him as the guy that was yelling out our play calls in the Philly and Brooklyn series the last 2 years. And I'm really looking forward to working with him.
Here's Udoka.
Well, I think it's all relationship-based. You got to build that foundation off the court somewhat. Also understand you can't coach everybody the same way. What motivates others might embarrass others. And so you find that balance there. But like I said, it comes down to trust, respect, and, you know, being in alignment with our goals. And I think the players, it comes down to their character ultimately also. You know, the way they want to be pushed and taking constructive criticism. And I think we have a group that has done that so far, that the times I've been with them. And I think just in our conversations lately, they're looking forward to that. So it's just striking the balance of knowing their personalities, you know, how they want to be coached. And like I said, we have a willing group, and they've only reiterated that with myself in our conversations lately. So looking forward to it. I'm not worried about our group, you know, worried about hard coaching. They're asking for that, and it's something I'm going to bring to the table.
Let's check in on the Boston Red Sox now. Have hit the halfway point of the season in style. Red Sox, a sweep against the Yankees last weekend and a solid series against the Kansas City Royals at home before they hit the road for the A's and in Oakland this weekend for battle against the Oakland Athletics. Checked in with the manager of the Boston Red Sox, Alex Cora, because to me, the three Sox players that are most likely to go to the All-Star game in J.D. Martinez, Xander Bogaerts, who's arguably one of the best players in baseball right now, and Rafael Devers, who's in that same category, they have driven this train, and in particular, Devers' strong first half. Let's hear from Alex on that.
Alex, you've discussed a lot of the reasons that, you know, this team is a first-place team, but is any of it possible if your 3-4-5 aren't playing like the superstars they're capable of and having that come to fruition? Has that been kind of the base of everything?
I do believe that their start was huge for us. Especially JD. You know, everybody had question marks and doubts about who he was going to be. And, you know, he hit that walk-off against Tampa, the ball over the right fielder. and he hit 10 home runs in April. I do believe that set the tempo for us. You know, they came out of the gate swinging the bats. Usually, Ralph is a slow starter, and he's, you know, he's having a great first half. The pitching too, I've been amazing. But I do believe those four right away. You know, the way we scored runs in Baltimore after we swept the Rays, and then we went to Minnesota. If I'm not mistaken, we kept doing things, and you know, the comebacks and all that stuff. But they set the tempo for all this. Those guys.
Rafi's defense, what's impressed you about, you know, the way that he's been playing on that side of the ball, particularly going to his left and coming in on base balls?
Yeah, his routine is a lot better. Obviously, he's in a better spot physically. Like I said before, I said it the other day, you know, like now, if he makes an error, it's not the end of the world. You know, he knows errors are part of it. But he's done so many things throughout the season to get better. You know, he started playing long toss with Kike in spring training, you know, and you see the accuracy now with his throws, you know, and the carry. You know, there's off days for us on the road, and he goes to Carlos, and hey, we got to go out there and work. And now work is just, you know, he goes through his routine, but hey, I want to work in this one. You know, let's go to the left and turn the whole play. So he has a plan. And then he goes out there and he executes it. And he's been really good. He's been really good. The errors are part of the game. We know that. But, I mean, I think his improvement is, you know, this is night and day compared to 17, night and day compared to 18 and 19. This is, you know, a guy that we really, you know, we would love to, hey, hit it to third base now, you know, because he's going to make the play.
Did you ever have any doubt in that realm? You know, obviously people always talk like, is he going to be a DH? Is he going to be a first baseman? Did you always think with the hands, with the arm, and with his competitiveness that he was going to get to this point?
No, I never had a doubt that he was going to be a solid third baseman. His footwork, the athlete, and, you know, when you play him in the shift and you put him in the shortstop, you see the way he moves. You know, he moves real well. And, you know, we always believe in him. But I think he's done – more, you know, now he's making plays out of his range. I don't know if he's leading the league in those plays. You know, when you start seeing the numbers, we can use the numbers now, right? It's halfway through the season. We can use defensive run saves and all that. You see the guys around him and the numbers, and you're like, whoa, you know, like, he's really good. But the thing is that he will always be considered an offensive third baseman, which we don't mind. You know, he's like Xander. He will always be considered an offensive shortstop, you know, and that's why we just want him to make the routine play. But we're very proud of him. You know, he's put work, you know, the work he put in the offseason, it was the beginning of everything that has happened. A good first half, which is the first time in his career, good defensively, running the bases has been amazing. I mean, what else we can say, you know? Hopefully the second half is as big as the usual second half he has. If he does that, who knows? Who knows where we're going to go?
Red Sox starting pitching has been strong as well. And one of the major reasons for that, Nathan Eovaldi. He has been great throughout the course of this year. I talked with Nasty Nate at Fenway Park.
Nate, this has been a dominant season for you. Kind of halfway through it, what do you evaluate as being some of the major reasons you've had, the type of success you've had through the course of this first half?
I would say going back to spring training, you know, we had that mindset coming in of attacking the strike zone and, you know, getting that first pitch strike and trying to get batters out in three or four pitches or less, having a quick tempo up there on the mound. I think that's all been able to help out really well. And the curveball this year too, curveball and my slider. I've been throwing my slider a lot better this year, and I've also been using the curveball a lot more. And for me, my mindset on the curveball, it's kind of like my changeup. It's my slowest pitch that I throw, and it's got the largest break to it too. So I think that keeps the hitters off of my fastball a little bit more, and it allows the fastball to play up in the zone better as well.
About a month and a half into the year, it seems like the hitters had kind of adjusted and they were swinging earlier in the count. What type of adjustment did you make at that point, and did you ever kind of deviate from that strike first type of mentality?
It's tough. I mean, anytime you're facing any good quality teams, like, you have to go out there and not only have one plan, but, you know, a backup and then another backup. And a lot of the times, if the batters seem to be out there swinging at the first pitch right away, it's you either attack them you switch your approach and start attacking them in with my fastball, or you go heavily to the off speed, not necessarily making, you know, 0-2 pitches right out the gate, but just being able to attack the hitters early.
Alex has talked about when you have the type of fastball that you have, there's kind of a philosophy of always going back to it because it's that good. Mm-hmm. Has that changed at all this year, where have you been more comfortable throwing, you know, the curveball on a fastball count, or the splitters seen a little bit less usage this year? Has the kind of reliance on the fastball changed at all for you?
I mean, I still rely on it heavily. I think it depends on the batter, the game situations, things like that. But I've gotten a lot more confident throwing, you know, my other off-speed pitches, like you said, kind of in any part of the count. Splitter's been inconsistent for me, but I feel like I'm really close with having that. You know, the last two or three starts, it felt really good coming out. But last night, it just kind of kept slipping. But I mean, other than that, I feel really confident in throwing all of my pitches, and, you know, kind of like I touched on with the slider, I feel like that's been a really nice mix for me as well.
The stopper's mentality is something that you've always seemingly had. Like, you've wanted to go out and you want to take the ball and you want to keep things rolling. Has that changed at all this year with, you know, being the number one in this rotation, where is there more of an emphasis on you of making sure that losing streaks stop with you? Because that's been a big key for the team this year. You haven't had a losing streak above three games.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's everybody in our rotation. Everybody wants to be the stopper, and you go out there and you want to give the team the best chance to win. And I've said it multiple times. I feel like if we're struggling as a team, if you can go out there as a starter and throw up great numbers, you know, it's gonna good things are gonna come from it. And I think that goes with Nick the other day when he was throwing it against Tampa. You know, he threw what, 6 2/3 no hit baseball right there, and unfortunately we didn't win that game, but we were in it all the way until the end. And now we roll into this series against the Yankees, and we've been playing really good baseball all around. So I think it was part of his performance out there and, you know, being a stopper, like you said.
Final thing, this is kind of one of those chicken or the egg type of questions, but it seems like the bullpen's depth has allowed for the starters' success. And obviously the starters gotten a lot of credit, as they should, for, you know, the way this team has played. But do you think how do you think that plays into the overall team dynamic when you have the bullpen, particularly Whitlock and his ability to come, Josh Taylor? How does that play into what Alex is doing with the starters?
No, our bullpen's been amazing for us this year. You know, last year we had the injuries, we had COVID-related things going on, so our bullpen didn't have as much depth. But the guys we have now, we have guys who can go long in the game. You know, if the starter's not able to, we got guys that can fill it up. And the way the starters have been throwing this year, it's a big part of what they've been able to do for us as well. You know, we can go out there and go 5 or 6 innings, and, you know, we may only be at, you know, 70, 80 pitches, and we're coming out and we're still able to get the wins, and they're able to lock it down and hold the teams, you know, without allowing any more runs. So they've been a huge part of what we've been able to do.
Nate, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Eduardo Rodriguez, a strong outing against the New York Yankees on Sunday, which gave the Sox the sweep. He pitched 6 innings, gave up only 2 runs, and it feels like Eduardo has turned the corner.
Hey, do you feel like this was the best overall series of the season for the team, just how you seem to dominate all aspects of the game?
I mean, that's what we got to do with every team. You know, I mean, every series, we just got to go out there and win. You know, I mean, if we want to go to the playoff and you want to go into the World Series, it's not just win 3 games against the Yankees. You know what I mean? It's win against every team in the league. That's the only way we're gonna make it to the playoffs. So, I mean, it feels good to win 3 games in a row against a team, you know what I mean? But no matter who we're facing, we got to keep winning 3-4 games to make it to the playoffs.
Just how important has the movement on your and location on your cutter been just to getting where you want to be? Is that kind of the central piece to what you've been able to do and getting back to where you want to be?
I mean, I feel like that with all my pitches, you know what I mean? Fastball, changeup, cutter, curveball, whatever that throw is just about location. You know what I mean? Like backdoor cutter, inside cutter, it's just about location. Foreseen, whatever. I just need to locate it right where I want it. And if I locate it, I know something good is going to happen. You know what I mean? Like Josh today, the homer, that was a really good fastball. I feel it was a really good pitch to throw between Baskin and I, perfect pitch. He just make a good swing and hit it out of the ballpark. You know what I mean? So then it's when you take your cap and you just go like that. You hit the ball out. But it was a pitch what I want and was right what I wanted. So everything is about location, no matter what pitch, you know.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Also, over the weekend, have an opportunity to sit down with Matt Blake, the pitching coach from the New York Yankees. Joined by Matt Blake, he is the pitching coach for the New York Yankees and, of course, Concord High grad and Concord baseball star. And now, of course, with the Yankees as pitching coach here at Fenway Park. And
Matt, what's the experience been like for you coming to Fenway Park this time around, this year, with fans and having perhaps some family, friends be able to take part in things?
Yeah, it's definitely been exciting to come back in here. Obviously, we haven't played quite like we want to so far, but I think just, you know, having got a little more experience in the league as a Yankee, I think it's always interesting to come into Fenway Park and see the energy in the crowd and just see the liveliness of the experience here. I think it's definitely a separator amongst the league.
Do you still, you know, feel like that kid that was at Fenway Park at certain points in time? Like, I was watching you go out on Saturday night to talk to Jordan Montgomery. You're taking the walk out there, and that's obviously a pretty special moment for a kid from New Hampshire. Obviously, you're engaged in the competition, and you're trying to get Montgomery right in that circumstance. But is there any of that that kind of sifts in, like, wow, this is pretty awesome. This actually happened. Here I am.
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a, like, you know, pinch you moment when obviously you're engaged in the moment of the game and your job, but then after the game when, you know, your friends back home had, you know, seen you on Nesson or something along those lines, it definitely kind of is something a little bit more when you're in Fenway, that's for sure.
The last time we spoke in person was at down in Tampa at Steinbrenner Field, and that was right before COVID hit. And there was such excitement on your part about getting things started, what the environment was going to be like. And then, obviously, a lot of things changed. How has the experience been for you as pitching coach compared to what you kind of expected in those moments leading in, where COVID came in, communication changed, you were still trying to get to know everybody and their habits? What were some of the curveballs that were thrown your way?
Yeah, I think last year was definitely a challenge. With one of the things that I wanted to set out to do was obviously create the culture of our group mentality as a pitching staff. And, you know, with the COVID protocols, it kind of limited some of our group meetings and things along those lines. So you're more limited to one-on-one and small group environments. So I think this year one of the things we set out to do was just make sure we had tighter group communication and better dialogue amongst the staff. And I think that's something that we've done with a lot more meetings, and not meetings for the sake of meetings, but meetings to encourage the dialogue amongst the pitchers themselves, and that way we're building, you know, a tighter web of communication for the guys, and that's really been the difference this year.
Obviously, the Yankees haven't played the type of baseball that is expected of the group, but it seems like the pitching staff has really been carrying this team, and you've been doing so without, you know, the big names that you normally expect from the Yankees. Obviously, Tanaka left, and Happ, and some other veterans like Paxton and Ottavino, obviously with the Red Sox now. What's that been like, and how have you enjoyed that side of things of developing, you know, the younger pitchers and that, having that level of communication and engagement?
Yeah, it's been nice to see some of our younger guys step up this year, and some of the names that maybe we weren't expecting. Obviously, you know, Jonathan Loaisiga has really, you know, stepped to the forefront of our bullpen, and, you know, we put him in some big spots last year, and he kind of struggled a little bit in some of the higher leverage moments, and I think it was a good learning opportunity for him, and he's really embraced them this year. And then guys like Lucas Litke, who are, you know, basically like minor league free agents that we signed, and, you know, he's really stepped into a role that, you know, is capable of, you know, multiple innings or higher leverage situations. So I think, you know, not necessarily tying guys to because of the name they have to pitch in a certain situation, but letting them, you know, find the right spot for them and build on it as they go and give them more opportunities as they earn it. And I think that's just something we've preached to them, is just, you know, really embrace their strengths and go out there and take care of business and, you know, be confident that we have as talented a team as anybody, and, you know, we're proving it on the mound.
We've talked before about how your program is a little bit different than traditional programs, and your role as a pitching coach is different than others. What's the buy-in been like from that kind of down the line? And I assume that there's a lot of work that goes on system-wide as well, where you're working directly with the pitchers at the major league level. But what's the engagement like with minor leaguers and making sure that, you know, things are where they are? And are they where you want them to be from a holistic perspective?
Yeah, I think obviously one of the things I was made note of when I came in was I was, you know, heavy analytics and things along those lines, which I think is partly true that I value objective information, but I think the thing we want to make sure we don't get lost is some of the nuances of the game and some of the art of the game, and making sure guys understand, you know, how to build their game skills and not just worry about the tools they're building, whether it's, you know, pitch movement and things like that that they're focused on in their side sessions or in the minor leagues, but then learning how to manage a game and learning how to manage big innings and things like that. And I think that's something we stress at the major league level, is, you know, really honing your game skills and your game management, and not just focusing on purely the objectives and the analytics, which are the backbone of how we evaluate players and assess what they need to get better at. But at the same time, you have to go out there and play the game with emotion and learn to handle that. And I think that's something that we've really embarked on at the major league level, and we're making sure that it's flowing through the minor leagues as well. But, you know, it really comes down to just the balance of the two.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about pitching from a kind of an overall perspective, like youth to big leagues. And I talked with Alex Cora about this as well, where he feels that a lot of the things that we see at the big league level are as a result of what happens, obviously, at the lower level, and even how kids learn. You're trying to hit for power, trying to throw with velocity as opposed to pitching. And we talked a little bit earlier about our Concord Northeast baseball connection. And so how does this change? Does it need to change? And are you trying to implement, you're talking about a different style of pitching, of pitching the game versus, you know, fastball hot, up high and in, curveball low. I mean, that's been the way the game has been played here for a little bit.
Yeah, I think at the major league level, we'll probably start to see some things change as they're really cracking down on some of the, you know, the tools that guys were using out there to enhance their spin and things along those lines. So I think we might return a little bit more to a saner game at the major league level, hopefully. And then as you look at the, you know, the youth levels, obviously, you know, tools are important, but the guys that know how to go out and compete and play together and play as a team is really important. And it's hard to necessarily evaluate that and, you know, try out settings and things along those lines. And scouts go to evaluate that. But I think that's understanding, you know, how to play the game is really important. And it's something that we're really trying to make sure we're continuing to educate at the major league level, because we're getting a lot rawer player at the major league level that maybe has a lot of tools but needs to learn how to, you know, use them and channel them in a more efficient way. So, you know, I think it's something that's kind of gone by the wayside a little bit in maybe the last 5 or 6 years, and I wouldn't, you know, I'm probably part of the problem to a certain extent. So I think it's making sure that guys understand the value of the mental game and the emotional aspects of it to play the game the right way.
You mentioned the removal of the sticky stuff and baseball's implementation of that during the course of the season, and certainly that's come with some difficulty. You look at, like, Garrett Richards can't throw a curveball anymore with the Red Sox, and he's having to revamp who he is entirely. There's been a lot of focus on Garrett Cole. What have been your thoughts on the in-season implementation, and how has that, you know, affected you in trying to work with these guys? And is it fair to pitchers, quote unquote, to do this in the middle of the season?
Yeah, it's definitely a tricky topic, because on one hand, like, there was fair warning at the beginning of the year that they were going to monitor it, but the, you know, changing in the middle of the season is never easy. So I think it's part of the, you know, part of what they signed up for is to make sure they have to adapt when the rules are going to be enforced. And I think it's actually been less of an issue than people maybe anticipated, but I think there are the outlier cases where, you know, guys have been relying on, you know, a foreign substance to, you know, get a better grip on the ball, and it's really impacting them. And obviously that's something they have to work through, but I do think that it maybe has had less impact than we anticipated, which is a good thing to see, because the worst thing you want to do is have the game change in the middle of the season and all of a sudden, you know, the guys that you thought you had out there aren't the same guys.
Who do you enjoy watching pitch the most? I mean, you have two guys on your staff that I love watching, Garrett Cole and Aroldis Chapman, just because of that, you know, pure dominance that he has, the stature and so forth. When you look around the league, I mean, it's tough not to want to watch DeGrom every single start, and you get that opportunity, obviously, in New York, and you see him personally as well. But who's the guy that you like to watch pitch now? Or are there any guys from the past, too, that you'll point specific players to and say, this is something you could do here in terms of your approach or curveball or things of that nature?
I mean, I obviously grew up watching Pedro, and I thought that, you know, he's a guy that had really good balance of power and art. You know, he understood how to pitch and how to play the game, but he also had pure power to his game. So, you know, obviously that's why he had such a dominant run. But, you know, Zach Greinke was a guy that I really enjoyed watching, that, you know, they have a wide range of tools and skills they can lean on, and they're not a one-trick pony. And I think the guys like Garrett, you know, Garrett's a great example of that too. Like, he's more than just a power pitcher. He's a student of the game, and he's looking, you know, how to develop himself and how to continue to evolve. And I think it's a conversation we continue to have with the rest of the staff, is that just because who you've been is kind of what you've made your name on doesn't mean that's who you have to be going forward. And I think just understanding as your body changes and your delivery changes, it's going to open up other avenues for you. And I think watching Pedro and Greinke do it is obviously a great, you know, great way to look back on the game and see where it's going forward.
Nathan Eovaldi is a good guy to watch too for kids with the Red Sox. The great power, but he's also able to offset that with a number of off-speed pitches. So final thing I want to ask you about Dustin Pedroia's ceremony here on Friday night. As a guy who grew up watching Petey, what was that like for him? Is that one of those kind of pinch yourself type of moments to be a part of that and see, you know, Pedro coming out and see the pomp and circumstance?
Yeah, it's funny because I've always been here as a visitor, you know, to the of the field and a fan. So, you know, to be on the field during one of those experiences with guys that you grew up watching is definitely, like you said, a pinch me moment. And, you know, just seeing some of the Hall of Famers come out and Pedro and Louis Tiant and, you know, having Jacoby and Wakefield, all those guys on the field, and just, you know, the energy in the crowd, it really is what makes it special here. And I think, you know, Friday and Saturday night in Fenway in a summer game and, you know, full capacity, I think that's what we came for. You know, that's what makes this game special.
Matt, thanks so much. Great to see you. Look forward to catch up again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.